Of the Pack Podcast. Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
What's going on, everybody? We are back and better than ever. This is Pulse of the Pack. Late on a Saturday night, depending on where you're listening from, but it's Saturday night. What better do you have to do than listen to this show, your favorite Packers podcast? I am Jacob Westendorf here in Rockford, Illinois. The temperature is starting to drop, but my enthusiasm about this team is not, and there's a lot of reasons for that. Joined with me, as always, is my friend Jason Perrone, who we got to have a little reunion on Monday. That was nice. I'd like to give a special shout-out to the Podfather, CD. Thank you very much for hosting a tailgate with us. John Rahor, if you're listening, I'm sorry we weren't able to hook up. I hope that we can do that at some point in the near future. But Jason is out in Arizona celebrating a big win for his Arizona State Sun Devils. Jason, how you doing?
It's good to be back in the top 25. Knocked off the number 7 UCLA Bruins. It's funny, the road team has won the last 3 years in a row. So I had to send a little tweet to our friend Demarius Randall. Told him to give a little extra love to his buddy Brett Hundley. Hopefully Hundley's doing okay today, but doing fantastic, man. It was great to see you. Good to get together with CD. Yeah, unfortunately we didn't see John, but we did see a pretty good football game on Monday night and another great performance by the Packers, specifically their quarterback. I have a feeling we're probably going to talk about that, right?
Definitely. Kind of hard to go through a Packers game these days without discussing Aaron Rodgers. One final note on college football. Speaking of being back in the top 25, my Michigan Wolverines are back in the top 25 and celebrating a big win over the Maryland Terrapins. They have a showdown with Northwestern next week before taking on the Michigan State Spartans. So I'm very excited for college football. I'm more excited for professional football. The Green Bay Packers beat the Kansas City Chiefs 38-28 in a game where the final score doesn't really tell how dominant the Packers were throughout the game. And you mentioned Aaron Rodgers, and he was Aaron Rodgers. 5 touchdown passes, a bit of a surprise. Pro Football Focus, one of my favorite statistical websites, decided that game was average. If that was average, I don't know what the hell good is. But, you know, Pro Football Focus isn't perfect. I would still say use them for a lot of various different statistics. But they have a right to be wrong, I suppose. Aaron Rodgers was brilliant. 5 touchdowns, 3 to Randall Cobb. Ty Montgomery had his first Lambeau leap. And Jason, all James Jones does
is catch touchdowns.
That would be correct. James Jones caught another touchdown. So there are your 5 touchdowns for the Packers. They do not come out healthy. Devontae Adams re-injured his ankle. Morgan Burnett is still not good to go. Jake Ryan got dinged up throughout the course of the game. The Packers injury report is very long. But we'll get to all of that later. Let's talk about the quarterback. The stuff we're seeing from this guy is all-time great. I mean, I'm sitting there in the stands, and I've been to a lot of Packers games recently. I've been fortunate enough to have some connections, ability, whatever you want to call it, to be able to be in Green Bay for each of the last 11 Packers home games in attendance watching Aaron Rodgers do his work. What you're seeing is all-time great, and it seems like every game he does something different that surprises me, and I just have to stand up and go, wow. I mean, this guy, it doesn't seem to matter who's around him, who gets hurt. Jordy Nelson goes down, well, let's make James Jones good. Devontae Adams goes down, let's make Ty Montgomery good. Richard Rodgers, I mean, they have a lot of weapons that seem to emerge, and it's not a guy like Dez Bryant or Calvin Johnson or somebody like that. Julio Jones has never played with Aaron Rodgers, somebody along those lines. This guy's phenomenal. I mean, I know his career's not over, and I hate these conversations, but what you're seeing is could arguably be the greatest skill set of quarterbacks that we've ever seen. He has, in my opinion, mastered the quarterback position, and that is very hard to do. Through three games, the Packers have turned the ball over once. That was a fumble by James Starks. Aaron Rodgers has yet to throw an interception, knock on wood, because they're on the road tomorrow. We'll talk about that too, but I'm running out of superlatives to talk about this guy. He was compared to Michael Jordan by Scott Tolzien. Now, there was some debate on that. But, Jason, how good is this guy?
I am also out of superlatives. I feel like we just kind of have the same intro every week. And it's warranted because Rodgers is playing at a very elite level. And that word gets thrown around way too much. There was a big debate after the Thursday night game between the Ravens and the Steelers about whether or not Joe Flacco is elite. They're still throwing that word around, and I basically told Twitter to just shut up because we're talking about Joe Flacco here. I mean, you know, compared to Aaron Rodgers, and if you want the gold standard at quarterback play in the NFL, it's definitely Aaron Rodgers right now. You could probably throw Tom Brady in there as well, but, you know, Jacob, to your point, I think we're starting to get into that point in Rodgers' career and with his play over the last, I mean, gosh, five, six seasons that – you know, we're not just talking about this year anymore. We're talking about all time, like you said. So, you know, I don't want to take it for granted. Like I said, I try to appreciate it as much as possible. But this is why the Packers don't ever get blown out. Because if he's a quarterback, they're going to score points. The only reason they won't score points is if receivers just all of a sudden start dropping the football. But his passes are accurate. It's unbelievable. Training camp every year. He's throwing the ball in the net. You know, he does things that I've never seen any other quarterback do. I get the rules are a little bit different right now. Offenses have a lot of advantages in today's NFL, but you still can't make a quarterback be as accurate as Aaron Rodgers is. And yeah, I mean, he's so careful with the football. It's like, how can the Packers, you know, who's going to beat this team? I know we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but the way they're playing right now, even with some guys dinged up, who's going to beat this team? Aaron Rodgers is a huge reason why that's a legitimate question.
Absolutely is. And, you know, one thing, my guy Ross Uglum from the Bench has discussed on his earlier piece this week. It's titled, Let's Talk About Aaron Rodgers for a While. And basically what he said was, Aaron Rodgers plays well, and it's like we don't even talk about it. It's almost like it's a given. And that's crazy. I mean, Aaron Rodgers played arguably a perfect game against the Chicago Bears. Wasn't discussed enough. I mean, he's been phenomenal. Again, we're out of superlatives. Aaron Rodgers is awesome. That's the intro to this show just about every week. Packers fans are incredibly spoiled. Those of you that are my age and younger, you've seen Favre and you've seen Rodgers, and that is it. That's incredible. I mean, there's really nothing better to say about it. It wasn't all great for the Packers offense, however. The running game wasn't as potent as it has been. Eddie Lacy was dinged up. His workload was limited. Alonzo Harris had a nice carry. But for the most part, they kind of struggled to grind the game out. A lot of that has to do with the tackle play. Don Barclay, that concern is well known. He's held his own, kind of, through the two games he's had to play. David Bakhtiari, it looks like he's playing hurt. Jason, I want to know, this has got to be a long-term concern if he can't be at the top of his game, right?
Yeah, of course. He's the left tackle. We talked about last week how he's had his struggles. He had some struggles against the Seahawks with those speed rushers on the end. You know, kudos to Bakhtiari. He plays hurt, and obviously if it's to the detriment of the team, he's going to come out. But, you know, we know that he's going to play through some things. I mean, he was potentially injured, had a concussion. I think that might have been the wild card playoff game against the Niners at the end of 2013. He blew right past the trainers and went back in and a play later. I think it was on an extra point attempt or something like that. So, you know, he's a team guy. He wants to be out there. But Yeah, he's the left tackle, and it's eventually it gets to the point where you have to kind of save, you know, somebody has to save him from himself and make sure that he's not really hurting this team. And I don't want to go back to the days of 2011 where you had Marshall Newhouse, the turnstile left tackle, and Aaron Rodgers just had to create everything to his right in order to keep the offense rolling, which they did. They set records that year anyway. So, you know, fortunately, Brian Bulaga is going to come back in the next couple of weeks. That's going to give the offensive line some more flexibility. You know, I don't know if they start putting Josh Walker out there a little bit more other than as an eligible pass catcher, which was an interesting wrinkle we saw on Monday night. But, yeah, I mean, Bakhtiari's the left tackle. He's got to be healthy. If he's not, it's more shuffling on the line than you lose some of that continuity. You know, like you said, it's concerning from that standpoint. You don't want to see any potential danger to Aaron Rodgers or the run game because those are obviously two key components to the offense rolling as we continue on this season.
No, and to use a McCarthyism, if you know, the Packers are already stretched as far as their depth at left tackle or tackle in general. With no Bulaga, there is no left tackle on this roster if Bakhtiari is unable to go for the foreseeable future. So he's got to be healthy and he's got to play well. One other guy, the rookie, and got to give him a little bit of props, we did earlier, Ty Montgomery earned his first Lambeau leap on Monday, caught his first touchdown from Aaron Rodgers. Nice to see a rookie getting into the mix and probably a guy that could play a key role down the stretch, especially with as teams kind of figure out what everyone's doing. You figure Jamie Jones isn't going to catch a touchdown every week, or at least you would imagine he won't. So, you know, the more weapons for this team, the better. Montgomery, big addition here, and good things coming for this guy. The injury report, which is something I want to discuss going into tomorrow's game, Davante Adams hurt his ankle again. It was very clear to me up in the stands, which obviously made it clear to the team on the sideline as well, that he was unable to go. I think he just kind of needed another week, and he pushed himself to play, and unfortunately, as the game started, it was clear he was unable to go. You know, he went up to jump for a ball. He tried to jump off of his hurt ankle, and there was just nothing there. Didn't catch a pass that was easily catchable for a guy as talented as him, and he didn't catch the ball. So Adams is doubtful for tomorrow. Morgan Burnett is also doubtful for tomorrow, and that leads to the elevation of Jared Abradaris. Jared Abradaris is now on the 53-man roster. Bruce Gaston was released to make room for him. Jason, the question I guess I have, is this just a question about depth, or is it an indictment of Jeff Janis offensively, or more importantly, is it adding another player to the offense for fans to complain about that's not getting the ball enough?
Oh, well, the last one, that definitely. I mean, give us, I'll say us, because I don't want to isolate or put any Packers fans on the spot, but, you know, if you give any fan base an opportunity to complain, they're going to take it. So that's definitely going to happen. I don't know. We kind of chatted about this a little bit earlier today. I kind of think it's an indictment on Janis. I mean, think about this. I know that the Packers are down a tight end. Andrew Corliss went on injured reserve, designated to return, so he's out for a while. And then they didn't elevate Justin Perillo yet. So it's basically Richard Rodgers and Kenard Backman at tight end. But if they felt comfortable with the four receivers that they had and you've got those two tight ends, I don't necessarily know that Jared Abradaris makes the most sense to bring up unless there's a concern or a question somewhere. I mean, you're not going to throw Abradaris in off the practice squad and make him a key piece of the offense all of a sudden in week four. So I have a hard time thinking that he's all of a sudden going to catch 10 balls tomorrow. But – you know, I do think he'll play. If they're going to elevate him, he's got to be active, right? You figure that. I don't necessarily know that with the Niner secondary being what it is, that the Packers need to go five wide to be productive, especially with Lacy and Starks both playing. So I think it's an indictment on Janis. You know, once again, he kind of shot himself in the foot on Monday night, had a catch, it got called back. You know, he ran the deep route, you know, ran the nine route early in the game, but he was way out of bounds. The ball ended up being thrown away, you know, catchable. So that's my thought. My thought is it probably has a little bit more to do with Jeff Janis and his continued lack of ability to develop and grow within the offense. So, but kudos to Jared Abradaris. And I know there's a lot of Packers fans that are also Badgers fans that probably needed a little silver lining after today's Badgers-Iowa game. So here you go, folks. Jared Abradaris is an active Green Bay Packer against the Niners.
Jason, I tend to agree with you as far as the Abradaris-Janis quandary, and this isn't to say that Jeff Janis doesn't have a role on the team, because in my opinion, he's been a hell of a special teams player. His position of gunner, between him and Quentin Rollins on Monday night, I mean, I was worried about DeAnthony Thomas, and he was unable to do much in the punt return game. That was nice to see. He's been good on the kickoff team. He's an athletic freak, so that definitely has some benefit on the special teams role. But offensively, you mentioned it. You know, the one catch he had got called back because of a penalty, and it was his penalty. He wasn't set. You've got, you know, on the play, I don't remember if they ruled it a fumble or an incomplete pass or if it even mattered. But realistically, he caught the ball and then dropped it. It was on the ground, which is something that's not going to earn any more reps. The big story, in my opinion, from Monday night was the defense. It was discussed a lot early in the season, and especially after the first game, same old Packers run defense, yada, yada, yada. Well, since that time where Matt Forte ran wild, I think he just ran for another run, a big run against the Packers, but since then, Marshawn Lynch and Jamaal Charles have averaged 3.4 yards per carry against the Packers run defense. I know they didn't handle garbage time well. I understand that. A lot of people have made comparisons to the Atlanta game, and I think that was very valid after Monday's performance. But when the result was still in question, that Packers defense was dominant. The first half, Aaron Rodgers had 3 touchdown passes in the first half. Alex Smith only had 2 completions. Jamaal Charles was unable to get going. Mostly dominant. Jason, any concerns about the way they handled once the game was in hand?
I mean, I'm going to say, yeah, you know me. You know, if I can find something to harp on, I will. We just talked about that whole idea. And, you know my mantra, close strong, finish strong. So everybody keeps talking about, I keep hearing in all the podcasts and all the post-game shows how the game was never really, you know, out of hand. The scoreboard doesn't indicate how, you know, lopsided this game was. But they still, you know, the Chiefs still were able to put up 21 points in the fourth quarter when this game should have been kind of locked down. Green Bay goes into this, you know, bend but don't break. Throw out all the cliches you want to. We all know what we're talking about here. Dom Capers is, you know, I understand he's playing for time, and he'll give up a bunch of chunks of yards in between the 20s, keep the ball carrier in bounds, make the opposition use up their timeouts and run out of time. And then, of course, you know, mixed in there in between every score, the Packers get the ball back. And you like to think that Aaron Rodgers running the offense is going to be able to burn some time off as well. But I just don't like that whole idea. I don't like the whole mantra of not continuing to take some chances. You know, that was one thing that the Packers were so successful with earlier in the game against the Chiefs, was they took some chances, and defensively they got there and they made life difficult for Alex Smith. And they obviously held Jamaal Charles in check. He scored 3 touchdowns, but he didn't have as many yards. So you got to continue to mix in a few wrinkles and take a few chances and send a statement too. I mean, I'd like to see the Packers make a statement. You know, the big thing about making big plays on defense, you had 7 sacks on the night. Those are huge, big plays that motivate a defense. So, you know, when you can – I mean, you already got the game won, but start thinking about the week following. I mean, you never want to think too far ahead and think you have a game won until the clock says zero. But you want to build up some momentum moving into the next week, and you want to put on film, hey, this team isn't going to continue to be what they've been the last 4-5 seasons. They're not going to become a doormat with a 3-score lead in the fourth quarter. Like, they're still going to come after you. So offenses still have to kind of think about what's going on. But at the end of the day, you know, the Packers won the game. It looks this year like they're going to be able to close out the ways that they weren't able to last season. You know, they've recovered 2 onside kicks already this season. So they're doing things that they didn't do last year. I don't want to complain too much, but I still say build those good habits now, form those good habits now, and then by season's end, you're polished and they know how to close out games. And there's no question that they're going to do it.
Yeah, and here's an oddball theory for me, if you will, is this team is so connected, and McCarthy talks about that a lot. I think that the defense almost relaxes when they see the offense is relaxing, and what I mean by that is after the game was in hand, you saw the Packers kind of go into their run-run pass, run-run-run punt, conservative type of offense. They weren't using the diverse personnel groupings with receivers, things of that nature. Maybe the defense sees that and is like, oh, well, they're not going to play anymore, so I guess we don't really have to either. But maybe I'm just spitballing there. I'm not sure. Jason, you mentioned the pass rush. That was back. You know, we talked about during the Seattle game how, you know, they didn't really have a rush on Wilson. We wondered if that was more by design or if they're just unable to get home. And Monday night, seven sacks. You said it. You know, Clay Matthews was playing outside linebacker. He had two sacks. Joe Thomas played in the middle. I highlighted that as a possibility on today's Pigskin for a story I wrote early last. Actually, the story came out on Monday, and Joe Thomas made a big play early in the game. So I was going nuts for that just because I like being proven right. Really no reason other than that, I suppose. But Nick Perry had a sack. Mike Daniels was a man amongst the boys. One name that was absent from the pass rush was Julius Peppers. And Julius Peppers, early in the season, he had 1.5 sacks against the Chicago Bears. That was a big thing. He had a forced fumble that was taken away on a replay review. Was so-so in the Seattle game, and then didn't really play particularly that well against the Kansas City Chiefs. Was unable to get to the quarterback when it was really, I mean, it was kind of like the, you know, old Oprah meme. You get a sack, and you get a sack, and you get a sack. You know, everybody got one except for Julius Peppers. Do you have any concern about his, one, his rep count, and two, his, I don't want to call it inconsistent because he has been probably average, above average by a normal person's standards, but any concern over the level of productivity, for lack of a better term?
No, because it's still early in the season, and even last year there were a couple games where Peppers was sort of absent. He didn't really do a whole lot, so I – 3 weeks in, no. If we're still having this conversation week 13, 14, then, yeah, I'm going to be a little bit concerned because this is a 14, 15-year veteran who has to understand the gravity of the opportunity that's in front of him right now. It's not like he can put this defense on his back anymore. I just don't think he's a transcendent player at this point in his career. But you want to see him making more of an impact, and he should be and can. I mean, he's a great athlete, even at this stage in his career, at this age. I mean, he stays available. He doesn't get hurt. He's on the field. He's a long body. He's able to get up there, disrupt the passing lanes. I mean, there's a lot of things that Peppers can and should be doing other than just getting sacks. I mean, he can create for other guys. He's somebody that offensive lines and offenses have to scheme for. He should draw some double teams. You know, like I said, get in the passing lane, disrupt the passing lane if he can't get to the quarterback. When he does get to the quarterback, a lot of times, you know, he gets the sack, he gets the strip fumbles, he creates and makes plays. We know that he said before the season started that he kind of tends to save himself at the beginning of games so he can be more fresh at the end of games and make a bigger impact. But if he's not going to do that, then, you know, it's like, well, he's got to kind of earn his pay every week. And we're talking about a Pro Bowler here. We're talking about a guy that's possibly going to be up for the Hall of Fame when his playing career is over with. So, you know, I don't want to badmouth him at all, but, you know, I'm not going to be too concerned at this point or this early point. Last year, you know, at the same juncture, I think he'd already picked off a couple balls and took him back to the house already, so he was making a bigger impact. I don't think age is catching up with him. He's still able to make the plays, but, you know, not a guy that you want to see be absent, especially when the Packers are paying him handsomely this year to kind of be one of their kind of equalizers. And you know, like I said, he's not a Clay Matthews. He's not a Mike Daniels, but he should definitely be showing up in the box score at the end of the game, having made an impact at least in some way. Or if he's not going to end up in the box score, then he should be on film creating for other guys where it's like, okay, Peppers drew the double team and, you know, insert linebacker name, was able to get to the quarterback for the sack. So too early to be concerned, but if the trend continues, I think it's, you know, something to kind of be a little bit worried about. But, you know, let's be honest here. The Packers are going to ultimately have to find a replacement for Peppers probably next year or the year after. I don't know if he'll be back. So it's not a long-term issue, but for this season and all the goals that they have, you want to see 56 be a big part of what they're trying to do.
And ultimately, I think he will be. Peppers kind of had, Jason, you mentioned it, the same sort of season last year where he'd have a blip for a couple weeks and then kind of play average, below average for a couple, and then he'd show up again. And, you know, I think the Packers are going to be fine in terms of the Julius Peppers production, especially if Jaron Elliott continues to emerge. They can use that guy as a way to give him some rest, which is something that was key last year. Nick Perry showed up. That was nice to see. Mike Neal had half a sack. That was nice to see. The Packers got a lot of production in their pass rush from a lot of different people, which is something in a 3-4 defense that you definitely want to see. Their stars, Clay Matthews, got after the quarterback. Mike Daniels got after the quarterback, and their role players did well as well. Now, the defensive line gets somebody back this week. You know, Josh Boyd, he went down with an ankle injury against Seattle. He's not coming back this year. Bruce Gaston was released. Some concern about the depth up front, but LaTroy Guyon is back now. And LaTroy Guyon last season was excellent by many accounts. Aaron Rodgers described him as one of his favorite teammates that he's ever had. He had a 3-game suspension due to some legal issues in the offseason. No need to rehash all those. You guys know by now what that was. But Guyon is back, and that means that the Packers can kind of start rotating their defensive linemen. And Dayton Jones has played well early in the season. B.J. Raji's been largely unblockable. And Mike Daniels had a Mike Daniels game. He had that kicking, angry child look on his face throughout the game. He kicked the crap out of the Kansas City Chiefs. They couldn't block him. Packers are going to need a guy like Guyon. He's one of their better run defenders. It's going to bolster the defensive line. How big of an addition is this that the Packers have played 3 games without one of their better run defenders, and now they get one back here as they go through a stretch where they're going to play guys like this week they've got Carlos Hyde, and we'll talk about him a lot when we get to the 49ers portion of this show. But they get Carlos Hyde, and then they've got two other tough backs coming in with the Rams' plethora of running backs and then Melvin Gordon, assuming the Chargers can get him rolling. Got to be an encouraging sign that the run defense has played well without him, and it's got to be even better that he's coming back now, isn't it?
Hugely. And it's not just his play that the Packers are going to benefit from, because he's going to play well. I mean, I was listening to Mike Clements on the Big Show earlier this week on the radio show, and he basically was talking about LaTroy Guyon and how big he is and how he seemed to have just gotten really, really big in terms of the workouts that he's had over these last 3 weeks during the suspension. It's not like all of a sudden in 3 weeks you're just going to get huge and add a bunch of bulk. And I have to kind of step back and maybe correct myself. This may have actually been a conversation that was had on the Bob McGinn and Michael Cohen podcast. So one of these two was the discussion was being had. But he's obviously kept himself in shape. He understands the opportunity that he has. He knows he made a mistake. I think it's kind of unfortunate, given what I've read about the situation and my personal opinion about what Guyon's infraction was and why he was arrested, that he even had to miss any time at all. I understand why, but that the situation that he was put in the beginning. But he brings that swagger. He brings that, you know, that kind of nasty to the defense. He plays with a lot of emotion, admittedly, and that's what the Packers need. I mean, they've already got Mike Daniels. You got B.J. Raji. Raji's playing for a contract. Raji's trying to make some things happen. He's actually playing well this year. They lost Josh Boyd, who wasn't going to be a big piece of the equation, but he was there for depth. So Guyon adds depth, and he adds immediate production right away. He's going to be in uniform tomorrow. He'll probably play sparingly. He'll be on a snap count, but get him in there and – let's not forget about Mike Pinnell. Pinnell's been actually playing okay, too, so Pinnell probably still start. But, you know, keep him in there and keep him fresh and keep him going, because, like I said, this is a game of confidence. LaTroy Guyon's got a ton of it, and this is only going to help that defense so much. You know, the run defense has already been so good, but you do hope that the change or you know, sometimes you add in a good player and you think, man, this is only going to make the team better, and then for some reason they take a step backwards or it just kind of disrupts the current chemistry that's going on, and hopefully that won't happen. But this is a big test again. You know, the Packers just continue to come up against the toughest running backs in the league. I mean, I don't think this was something that we spent enough time talking about on our season preview show. It was all the running backs and the caliber of running backs that the Packers are facing this season. And to have the defense playing as well as they are and to get Guyon back is definitely very big. I mean, you know, most of the injuries have been on the offensive side of the ball. And so the depth issues and some of those questions have more been offensive. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers mitigates a lot of that with the receivers that he has and just being able to make plays. But to have a full slate of guys on defense, especially up front, and have them playing well, that's fantastic. I mean, that's what we've been waiting for with this 3-4. And ever since 2010 when they won it all, I'm kind of waiting for this defensive line to get back to good. Remember when they lost Cullen Jenkins and then they just never got back to that level? And I feel like they might finally – be there. So that's how big the addition of Guyon could be.
Absolutely, it can be. And one other thing that, you know, I think benefits the team is, you know, a lot of people are talking about, and, you know, I don't want to spoil the end of the show for you here, but a lot of people are talking about that zone read. Colin Kaepernick, you know, the athletic quarterback, the athletic middle, you know, running backs, the middle passing game, stuff like that. Guyon adds another athletic big body. Now, nobody's going to confuse him for Julius Peppers in terms of athleticism, but he is an athletic big body. And the last time that these two teams met, the Packers were running with a defensive line of Ryan Pickett and Johnny Jolly and B.J. Raji and a lot of 330-pounders, and they were, what's the word, not fast, not athletic. They were basically there to plug it. you know, and they did well early in the season with that. Now they're trying to play faster, and I think that's a benefit for this matchup specifically. But I can't say it enough how much I think the guy on impact is going to be as the season goes on. Even if it's just another, you know, above-average defensive lineman, the Packers haven't – I mean, if he is above average, the Packers will have B.J. Rodgers, who's above average, Mike Daniels, who's very good, and LaTroy Guyon, who's above average. Packers haven't had three above-average defensive linemen in a very long time. Jason, you probably nailed it on the head. 2010 was the last time that happened, and that was Raji, Colin Jenkins, and Ryan Pickett. Ryan Pickett was more of a role player at that stage of his career anyways, but he was above average in that role. I'm excited for this defense. You know, I wrote a story. Again, if you guys want to check it out, Today's Pigskin, Google my name, check it out. You know, I kind of asked the question, what if the Packers are good on defense too? You know, the Packers are good on offense. You know that. As long as Aaron Rodgers is healthy, they're going to be good on offense. They're going to score points. But what if they're good on defense too? This is a team that could truly be a dominant force that a lot of people haven't seen really since even the 2011 team. They were dominant, but in a different way. This is a team that could be a complete team type of effort to be dominant, because the special teams we haven't even talked about. So there's not a whole lot to discuss from the Monday night game in terms of special teams, because there weren't a whole lot of impact plays. There were a lot of non-impact plays, I guess, which is an impact if you're punting the ball away or making kickoffs, stuff like that. They had one hiccup on the Nile Davis kickoff, but I think that was due to a slip and fall by Mason Crosby. That's easily correctable. But the Packers have been very good on defense and special teams so far this year. One other guy I want to talk about before we move on to the San Francisco 49ers to channel my inner Bill Belichick there, if you will. That's Demarius Randle. I've been calling for him to get more snaps. The opportunity arose for him to get more snaps, not necessarily the way the Packers would like. Morgan Burnett didn't play. Sean Richardson didn't play. So Micah Hyde was pretty much the only other safety next to HaHa Clinton Dix. Well, that means Casey Hayward would bump to the slot and Demarius Randle would play outside. Going into garbage time, which is, you know, a very subjective thought of when that actually started happening, Demarius Randle had been targeted 9 times and 0 completions had happened against him. So that is very impressive for a first-round pick, especially at a position where players tend to take a year before they can make an impact. Randle's been very good. We'll see if that trend continues, if teams start to pick up on some stuff from him and kind of attack him in different ways. But Randle's been very good, and I really do believe that if they can continue to develop him, this defense is at its best with Micah Hyde playing a Swiss Army knife role, Casey Hayward being your slot corner, and Demarius Randle playing outside. And that's nothing against Casey Hayward. It's not a demotion in today's NFL to be a slot corner, in my opinion. But Demarius Randle, to me, has been far too good to be giving away snaps to players that, in my opinion, are inferior at the position he's trying to play, which is outside corner in the base nickel dime defense. Jason, this is your guy. I mean, he's from Arizona State. And I'll let you gush. You know, here's your Arizona State Sun Devil. Let's talk about how good Demarius Randle's been.
Well, before we get to his play on the field, I got to give Randle, for those of you who've been on Twitter in the last 30 minutes, which hopefully if you are, you're listening to us and on Twitter at the same time, and you're very good at multitasking. He is an incredible wage maker. So I encourage all of you to make sure, if you're not following Demarius Randle and Brett Hundley on Twitter, follow them both. Because supposedly, later this week, the question of what if Brett Hundley had chosen to play at Arizona State University instead of UCLA, that the question will be answered. And it sounds like we're going to see Brett Hundley in an Arizona State jersey. It may have something to do with the outcome of tonight's game. So Demarius Randle has played some fantastic football. And I'm kind of using that term on purpose, because do I think his statistics have been fantastic? No. And do I think his play has been fantastic? Not on its own. But when you consider the totality of the situation, you had a safety coming in, converting to corner, and you know, guys playing corner on the outside now, you know, Jacob, you talked about how it's not a demotion to be a slot corner anymore. And in my opinion, if you're a slot corner on the Packers defense, you're still a starter because they play so much nickel. But to play outside corner in the NFL, and this is nothing new, especially in today's NFL where it's very pass-happy, that's a tough position to transition. Next to quarterback, corner might be one of the next toughest positions for guys to come in from college and immediately start playing at a high level at the NFL at. And I wouldn't say Randle's necessarily playing at a high level yet, But he's got the tools and the skills to get there, and I think by the end of the season, he probably will be playing very solidly. And I'm going to predict right now, at the beginning of next season, barring injury or something else happening that we don't know about, I think you're going to see Demaryius Randle as your starting outside corner, and Casey Hayward's going to be a full-time slot cornerback. So he's played well. He still has, he being Randle, still has yet to make a big play, come up with an interception, or you know, make a big impact. I mean, I guess he's defended some really good deep balls. You know, he's had some really good fundamentals in the way that he's playing. You know, he had a really nice tackle late in the game on Monday night where he just blew up the ball carry. It was not a screen pass actually. It was just a dump off, but he read it and just blew up the ball carrier in the backfield. I mean, right away, and it was one of those hits you could kind of hear from the sideline, which was amazing, you know, because corners anymore aren't your beaters. Those are your safeties, and you can't really hit guys anymore, but made a good play, made a nice tackle. He's playing above his rookie stature, his rookie level, and that's something the Packers needed because of the losses that they saw at cornerback in the offseason. And there were some questions when they drafted Randle as far as, man, is this the best pick to make? It was another one of those seeming kind of head-scratchers. After we've seen a few first-rounders not be great for Ted, we all had to kind of think, man, is this another first-rounder that we're going to be talking about in 4 years that we should have never taken? He's been great. He's lived up to the expectations I think most of us had for him and probably exceeded them. So, you know, this Packers team, you know, Jacob, you talked about, what if the defense is good too? Randall's going to be a big part of that. It's going to be a big part of the reason why the defense is going to be just as formidable as the offense. And that's why this Packers team has kind of that special vibe starting to click to it. And if they can pick up a win and start 4-0 and go through the first quarter of the season undefeated, you know, the sky's the limit for this team. And 23, Demaryius Randle is, as a rookie, one of the big reasons why. He's playing great.
Yeah, and Jason, you mentioned it, you know, about safeties being thumpers. Demaryius Randle's tackle got me out of my seat, and that never happens. I'm not the emotional type when it comes to plays like that. That was incredible, and it kind of made up for the bullshit penalty that Ha-Ha Clinton Dix got assessed to him late in the game. Shoulder to shoulder, apparently, is a penalty in the NFL now. I get it. It's bang-bang. It's fast. It's hard to do, but we've got to figure out a way to legislate this better. If it's helmet to helmet, make it a penalty, that's fine, whatever. But those shoulder-to-shoulder, that can't be a flag. But that's the game I grew up on. I guess I'll let it go for the sake of the better product, which is what they're claiming to have. That's the end of Kansas City Chiefs. Packers win 38-28. They have a game tomorrow, which is still tomorrow if you're in the Central Time Zone. If you're on the East Coast, it's game day for the Green Bay Packers now. It's 11:30 where I'm at, so it's not game day quite yet. They play a team that I'm sure you're aware of. That's the San Francisco 49ers. Early in the season, the theme of the Packers has kind of been about exercising some past demons. They won their first season opener since 2011 against the Chicago Bears this year, so that's one. The Seattle Seahawks, that's well established. I don't want to talk about the NFC Championship game ever again if I don't have to. And the other one is the Kansas City Chiefs, which is kind of an oddball one because the Packers are 1-2 against them in recent memory, but they did win the last time they were at Lambeau Field. And they ruined the perfect season in 2011. So maybe stretching a bit for a storyline, but the demon's there. This weekend's demon is perhaps the biggest thorn in the Packers' side since Super Bowl 45. Colin Kaepernick and the San Francisco 49ers. Since Super Bowl 45, those two teams have met four times. The 49ers have won all four. One of those was with Alex Smith as a starting quarterback in the season opener in 2012. Packers lost that game 30-22. They lost again in the playoffs that year, and I think Eric Walden may have just figured out that Colin Kaepernick has the ball on that read option. That game wasn't good. It ended 45-31. They played again in the season opener. The 49ers won that game as well. Colin Kaepernick threw for over 400 yards. The Packers were, again, kind of by design, not rushing him, trying to make him be a passer. They stopped their run, but Kaepernick and Anquan Boldin just went wild during that game. That game was a double whammy for me because I was facing Anquan Boldin in fantasy, and I was really pissed off about it. And then, obviously, in the playoffs, the Frozen Water Bowl, which is what Josh Sitton and TJ Lang called it, they lost 23-20 on a last-second field goal. Micah Hyde dropped an interception. It was right in front of me. I can still see it in my brain. And it still hurts a little bit, I suppose, even though that Packers team wasn't that good. But Sunday's a chance to right all those wrongs, get the fast start. Mike McCarthy said he wouldn't call a fast start until they started 4-0. Well, they have a chance to do that. It's a short week. It's in Santa Clara. I'm hoping, and Jason and I, we both predicted that the Packers would be playing in Santa Clara twice this season, once on Sunday and once in the Super Bowl. Really, the story here is Kaepernick, Wisconsin kid. You know, he's ripped the Packers apart in a lot of different ways. My question is, are they up to the task now? My answer to that question is I think that they are. Colin Kaepernick looks like a broken player. I know that he has played well against Green Bay in recent memory, and I've mentioned that. But 18 of those players that were in the last time these two teams played, those are the ones who returned. Jim Harbaugh is now at the University of Michigan. He's no longer in San Francisco. He's been replaced by Jim Tomsula. And the biggest story out of the 49ers camp this week was whether Jim Tomsula passed gas during one of his press conferences this week. I think he's one of the most entertaining press conferences ever, but that's just because I don't think he's the smartest person there, and he's kind of fun to make jokes at. But, you know, that's the bad person in me, I suppose. But the reason I think they're up to the task, I mentioned it earlier, they're far more athletic on defense now than they were then. Eric Walden isn't the outside linebacker against this team anymore. Brad Jones and A.J. Hawk are not the inside linebackers anymore. They don't have a lot of glaring weaknesses and slow players on the field that the 49ers can exploit. They're not playing with Jerron McMillan, which they did in that game where Kaepernick threw for over 400 yards. Vernon Davis is unlikely to play, and I know that Vernon Davis hasn't had the impact that you would expect from a tight end with his talent level. But even still, Jason, we've talked about this before, you know, that's the type of player that just shreds the Packers' defense. Athletic tight end, can get deep down the seam. Doesn't look like the 49ers are going to have him on Sunday. He was listed as doubtful. That's good news for the Packers. Obviously don't want to celebrate an injury. We hope that Vernon Davis gets well soon. But I do think they're up to the task defensively. I think that this team can control the game. I don't think the 49ers are very good. I know early in the season, for our season preview show, I had the Packers losing this game because they seem to always have a game in the season that they lose. You're like, whoa, how the hell did they lose that game kind of thing. You know, last year in New Orleans where they got blown out, or last year in Buffalo come to mind, for example, in those kinds of games. But defensively, this team's better than I thought they would be at this point in the season. And I think they're up to the task of slowing down Colin Kaepernick. He doesn't have the weapons. We'll talk about some of those weapons here coming up. But the question remains, Jason, you're the negative guy here, I suppose. Are they up to the task?
They better be, which is not an answer to the question. I guess I still don't feel 100% confident that they can be, because I'm one of those that likes to see it before I say it. You know, I predicted the Packers would go to the Super Bowl this year, and I didn't see it, but you know, I'm not sure. I mean, and I think I predicted a win in this game. I didn't pick this one as a loss, Jacob, but, you know, to your point, the Packers do kind of have those a couple stumble games a year, and I could see this being one. If it's going to be one, I don't think it's going to be because of Kaepernick, though. And even if Green Bay struggles to stop the read option, which, you know, our Cheesehead TV founder, Aaron Nagler, said on multiple occasions this week, if Dom Capers and the Packers defense can't figure out Colin Kaepernick today in this game, they never will. And that's very true, because not only is it the third time that they've seen him now, or the fourth time they will have seen him now, actually, but this is a different team. It's a different Niners team. It's a different Packers team. And Kaepernick is kind of broken. I think, you know, all the more reason for him to come out and want to play well. It's a home game in front of his home fans. It's the Packers, so he probably has a little bit of added confidence because he knows that he's ran well on this team and this defense before, and so there's no reason to think that they can stop him now, even though I think they played him a lot better in the last couple matchups that they had than they did the first in that first playoff game. But, I don't think it's going to be because of Kaepernick and the read option. I think it'll be because Hyde goes off, and, you know, he dropped 160 rushing yards on the Vikings in week one, and the Niners offensive line, you know, they've got Staley at left tackle, who's elite. He's a great tackle. They've got Boone at guard. He's a good offensive lineman, but they don't have the same offensive line. They're not as potent as they used to be. And the Packers are already, you know, scheming well for these good running backs, and they've kept a lot of these guys in check. So, you know, if they don't let Hyde go off, then I don't see any reason or any way that the Niners are going to beat the Packers. And I don't think, you know, Vernon Davis being out, obviously, you know, like you said, you don't want to see anybody injured. But, you know, the Packers have injuries too. I mean, there's a good chance that outside of Devontae Adams, they're not going to have Jake Ryan. who's a role player. He's not a starter, but he does rotate in. And they're probably not going to have Morgan Burnett. Burnett might play. I don't know. It's a calf injury. One of the, you know, we all know how touchy calf injuries are. So there's a good chance Burnett doesn't play either. So there's injuries on both sides. I don't want to hear that as an excuse from Niners fans or Packers fans. But, you know, I wrote about it in my Saturday scoop on Cheesehead TV today. I mean, they've got to figure out a way to stop Colin Kaepernick. But it's about making a statement. It's about doing something different. It's about saying, hey, we've improved. We've made changes. We're ready to finally do what we couldn't do before, which is shut this number seven down. And if nothing else, if you're not going to stop him completely, then make him beat you with his arm, because that's where Colin Kaepernick is at his worst. And I don't say worst because he's a horrible quarterback. He played terribly last week against the Arizona Cardinals, but he's still a decent quarterback. But you had a much better chance of beating Colin Kaepernick if you make him throw than if you let him run around. So, you know, with the lack of depth on the inside, one benefit on the Packers defense, you know, I mean an inside linebacker, one benefit there could be that, you know, Clay Matthews is spending more time in the middle. That might actually help scheme-wise in keeping Kaepernick in check. He kind of then becomes a spy, you know, because when Joe Thomas was playing well last week, they moved Matthews to the outside and he was rushing the passer, which is fine. But, you know, Matthews sometimes crashes down and he just runs himself right out of the play. And then you've just lost your biggest playmaker on defense because he allowed his own strength to be leveraged against him. So to get back to your very simple question, Jacob, I'm going to go with probably more yes than no, but I'm still going to leave a little bit of room for maybe not.
So you're hedging your bets. What else is new? Anywho, we'll go to matchups here. We ask this question every week. You know, what matchup is most in Green Bay's favor, and what do you think is working the best against them? I think the matchup that's most in their favor is the Packers' offense against the 49ers secondary. And the reason I think that is I did watch a lot of last week's game, and with all due respect to Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd, the Arizona Cardinals are a fantastic team. I would have no problem if somebody said they were the best team in the NFC. I think that's a very distinct possibility. That's not Aaron Rodgers and Randall Cobb and the way that Aaron Rodgers makes James Jones and Eddie Lacy and that offensive line and such play. This 49ers secondary is very torchable. This isn't the 49ers defense of old. There is no Justin Smith. There is no Alden Smith. There is no Patrick Willis. There's a hampered Navarro Bowman with that. He's still kind of coming back from that knee injury, the horrific knee injury he suffered in the NFC Championship game a couple seasons ago. The Packers can do a lot of things to this defense. It's just a matter of executing their plays, keeping Rodgers upright against some guys that they haven't seen a lot of, because they do have some players that you maybe not know their name that are able to get after the quarterback. But if the Packers can protect Aaron Rodgers, I expect him to have a big day. And it's, I mean, what is a big day for Aaron Rodgers these days, I guess? You know, he threw 5 touchdown passes last week, and it was considered an average game by some. You know, I guess anything's possible, but I expect a big day from Aaron Rodgers. You mentioned it. You don't think it's going to be a big deal. I do. You know, the matchup working against them is because I still have nightmares of Eric Walden. I still have nightmares of Russell Wilson running wild. Packers gave up 78 yards rushing, as well as they did on Lynch. They gave up 78 yards rushing to Russell Wilson on 10 carries. That's 7.8 yards per carry for a quarterback. That's way too much. Credit to Paul Heming for that stat from onmilwaukee.com. Check out Paul. He's a good friend of mine. Well, I'm exaggerating a little bit there, but he's a friend. I like him quite a bit. But that read option terrifies me, and I really do think that the only chance the 49ers have in this game is if they run that zone read to death and the Packers can't figure out a way to stop it. Now, to be fair to the defense, the last time they faced a game plan that included a lot of zone read option type stuff, the Packers did stifle Colin Kaepernick. The problem was he threw for 400-plus yards. Make him be a passer. I don't think that he's capable of throwing for 400 yards on this defense. What I mean by that is, again, no Jerron McMillan. Ha-ha Clinton Dix is a starting safety now. So the starting safety tandem in the 400-yard game was Jerron McMillan and MD Jennings. That is arguably the worst safety tandem in the history of pro football. Kaepernick's not going to throw for 400 yards. The weapons they have, we'll talk about here in a minute, it's not quite the same as when they had Bolden and Crabtree and Vernon Davis and Frank Gore as a threat in the backfield, things of that nature. That read option terrifies me. I can still see Colin Kaepernick breaking his own read, scoring a touchdown, and doing that stupid celebration where it looks like he's kissing his bicep. I don't want to see that. I have no desire to see that. Please, for the love of God, Dom Capers, figure out a way to stop that stupid read option, because it terrifies me for tomorrow's game. Jason, matchup in your favor.
our favor, I should say, and match up in the 49ers' favor.
Okay, so I'm not going to disappoint in terms of confusing and probably doing something that's not allowable. But so my matchup in Green Bay's favor, I'm going to go with the defensive front of Green Bay against San Francisco's offensive line, because I mentioned the San Francisco offensive line isn't what it used to be. They've got some good players, but you know, some of those guys are gone, and they're not at the same level that they were before. And Green Bay's front has been playing well. They've stopped the run against Marshawn Lynch, Jamal Charles the last couple of weeks, and really kind of put the game in the hands of a lesser offensive player and really helped the defense succeed. So I think you get LaTroy Guyon back, you get an emotional boost. You got Raji out there, you got Mike Daniels rotating in, Pinnell, you know, all those guys. I like them in terms of their ability to get into the backfield, you know, penetrate through and also clog up those offensive linemen, keep the linebackers clean. So in the same breath, you know, yes, okay, so the defensive line penetrates, they get through, they get to the backfield, but you've got a kind of a two-headed monster back there. You got Colin Kaepernick, who can take off and run with the ball if he sees a lane open. And I wouldn't put Kaepernick, you know, I wouldn't like any defensive lineman's chances against Colin Kaepernick. He's just simply much faster than they are. Or you got Carlos Hyde. So if they get back there, you know, they have to make the play. If they don't make the play, the matchup that I don't like, obviously the offensive weapon that San Francisco has that worries me the most is Carlos Hyde. So it's Hyde against the Packers' front. So the front is both the strength and the weakness, I guess, in this case, because if the Niners are going to have success on offense, I think it's going to be in the run game. And it's going to be because Hyde creates and makes plays. Packers haven't seen him before. He's had a couple of good games. He's a good running back. He's got the fourth most rushing yards in the NFL so far this season, and he's done it with fewer carries than the top three guys in front of him. So he's an efficient running back, and he's a guy that Green Bay has to scheme for. So while they're constantly paying a ton of attention to Colin Kaepernick and trying to exercise that demon, don't forget about the running back. You know, Reggie Bush is healthy and is going to probably play a little bit in this game too, but, you know, he's not anywhere near the player that he was before. And I know last year I made a big deal of him in Detroit and how big of a factor he was going to be in the two games that they played against the Packers, and he ended up not being much of a factor at all, at least in the second game. But, you know, so I'm not going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe with Reggie Bush again, but I think it's Carlos Hyde, and he's going to be the bigger problem. I think the Packers will finally, you know, figure out the Kaepernick situation, and that'll be a big moral victory. But hopefully they get the victory on the scoreboard because they were able to stop the run altogether. So disciplined play by the defensive line, and then that strength that they have against the San Francisco offensive line becomes a total strength and not a liability because they weren't able to stuff the play. You know, we've seen too many instances of linebackers and linemen getting to the ball carrier in the backfield and then letting the runner slip away and pick up extra yardage, and they're not bringing them down. So, you know, at the point of attack, they've got to be able to make the play, bring the ball carrier down, and not let them pick up those extra yards. Make San Francisco have to scratch and claw for every single yard and every single point they're going to put up on the scoreboard tomorrow.
Yeah, that'll be big too. You know, I really debated between Hyde and Kaepernick, so I guess I kind of threw it together with putting both of them with their read option. We didn't mention the receivers. Like I mentioned, there are two players. One was there, you know, one hasn't been. The Packers haven't seen him a lot with Torrey Smith. The other one's Anquan Boldin. I mentioned his big game, but that was also 2 years ago. He was much younger in football terms back then. Now, two more years, punishments being taken. He's still a good receiver, but he's certainly not the dynamic playmaker he was early in his career. Bolden's going to be your possession guy. Torrey Smith's going to be your deep threat. Are the Packers up to the task with Shields, Hayward, Randall to get those guys stopped? I think they are, and I think a lot of that's going to have to do with, one, I think this is a better secondary as a whole. Two, I mentioned it. I think Colin Kaepernick is a broken player. I don't know what's wrong with him. He just, you know, some of it was foreseeable. He wasn't always going to be able to run his own read and kind of run play-action passes off of that for his whole career, but as a whole, he hasn't really looked like the same player since that NFC Championship game against the Seattle Seahawks. He had a lot of bravado after that game. He said he was willing and ready to throw the ball at Richard Sherman, and then he did, and Sherman picked him off. And, you know, that seems to happen when you throw the ball at Richard Sherman. I think people need to stop making that a point of emphasis that teams don't throw his way. Teams don't throw Darrell Revis' way either. It's not a bad thing. It's probably smart for your offense, to be honest with you. But
he's a broken player. I mean, I think that the receivers, you know, we're not talking about Dez Bryant and Julio Jones out there. They're good players in their own right. I do think Bolden and Smith will be able to do some things against the Packers defense. But ultimately, I think that Kaepernick's going to make a couple mistakes. I think the Packers will be able to pick him off. The last time they played, Tremont Williams had a pick on a really badly underthrown ball to Vernon Davis. And Micah Hyde should have had an interception. I think in those types of cases, if Kaepernick throws a ball like that and stares down a receiver, the corners that the Packers have are going to catch those passes, and I think that they're going to do some damage with it. I don't see Bolden and Smith giving the Packers a whole lot of fits. Jason, the question I have for you is different from what we had earlier. The Packers are currently listed, for those of you that are interested in wagering jelly beans or degenerates, I mean, let's be honest, that's what we're talking about here. In Vegas, they are listed as 9.5-point favorites. Do you have any fear of a letdown game coming off a short week? We talked about this last week, and I mentioned the Packers. I didn't fear a letdown game against the Chiefs because they were at home. This is a little different. It's a West Coast trip. The injuries are starting to pile up a little bit. Do you have any fear of a letdown against the 49ers? This really doesn't look like a good football team, but stranger things have happened.
No, I wouldn't call it a letdown. I think if San Francisco just plays a better game, they win. I don't think it's going to be some fluky loss. And, you know, the Packers are playing so well right now. I don't want to sound cocky here or get ahead of myself, but, you know, isn't every game going to become a potential letdown game when you consider the disparity between the Packers and their opponents? I mean, you know, we're going to discuss when the Packers might finally lose a game. And so that tells you right there that there's obviously some debate about what it's going to be. The Packers are expected, you and I, expect them to continue winning a few games here after this one, including this one. So, no, I don't think this is a trap game. I don't even like using that term. I think this team is too focused. Aaron Rodgers understands the task. He's the general of this whole situation, he and Mike McCarthy, and then you've got the other stable of veterans who understand what's in front of them. They had a huge opportunity slipped through their fingers last year. They're not going to let it happen again. And we've seen these first 3 weeks that this team is focused and they're looking to get done what they need to get done. They're not letting themselves get hung up with bad play and mistakes that allowed them to lose games that they should have won. They got the win against the Chiefs. They got the win against the Seahawks. They're playing well at home. You know, we hope they can at least split on the road. They've already won one big road game. This would be another big one. I don't care how good or bad the Niners are. It's still a road win, a West Coast trip. Still going to be a big victory if they're able to get one. So I don't think there'll be a letdown. I think they'll play well. And if San Francisco just shows up and takes it to Green Bay and they play a better game that day, then hats off to them and on they move and the Packers don't get the victory. You know, and I won't consider it to be a huge, huge upset. I think, you know, we have to remember the lines on these games are to promote gambling and betting. It has nothing to do with, you know, necessarily, you know, how big of a beatdown it's going to be. We've seen teams favored by double digits and then get trounced or lose games, and we saw a bunch of instances of that happening today. So it's all about creating action on the gambling front. And so, you know, yeah, 9.5 points on the road is almost like 12.5 because you get 3 points for being at home already. But, you know, again, keep it on the level and kind of take it with a grain of salt. I think the Packers still have to play a solid game. They will. I don't think there'll be a letdown. I'm not calling this one a trap game. But, again, I think, you know, that one of the reasons we have to throw that term out, Jacob, is because the Packers are starting to play so much better than their opposition that it's almost like it's not going to matter who lines up across from them, maybe except for the Arizona Cardinals right now on paper. Every game is going to be a potential trap game by that logic.
Yeah, that's true, too. And one thing I think that you kind of alluded to was, you know, earlier in the offseason, Aaron Rodgers discussed the Packers' desire to have home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And in order to do that, he said they had to play better on the road. And he's one of those guys, it's an intangible thing. There's not really something that I can throw out there statistically to prove it. But when Rodgers is upset about something, when there's a chip on his shoulder, he plays better. You know, a lot of people have, well, shock jocks, I should say, have kind of opined that, you know, Rodgers is right now, the Packers are a product of Lambeau Field. And the numbers kind of support that. They averaged almost 40 points a game per game last year at home, only 22 on the road, somewhere in that general ballpark figure.
This year so far, 31 on the road. They're averaging quite a few points at home. The Packers are averaging 32 points per game, and that's with their best receiver having not played a single snap. That's crazy from an offensive standpoint. But the point I'm trying to make here is I expect the Packers to play well on the road as well. I don't expect them to be dominant like they are at home, but I do still expect them to not have one of those games where you're just sitting there like, come on, where's the offense? Why does the defense look lethargic? I just don't expect that. This team looks like they're on a mission. They have a chip on their shoulder. They're pissed off about losing last year's NFC Championship game, and they can tell you whatever they want about how that Seahawks game was just another game. It was a line of crap. It just was. You know, it's much like last year when they said playing against the Patriots was just another game all week, and after the game, Micah Hyde basically said, yeah, we were lying. Well, they're lying if they're telling you they're not on a mission to exercise all of those demons from last year and ultimately come out with a Super Bowl championship, because they are upset. It's a team with a chip on their shoulder because they believe they were better than the Seattle Seahawks. They believe they were better than the New England Patriots, and they should be defending their Super Bowl title this year. I expect the Packers to play well on the road. Before we get to our prediction, Jason, there's one thing I forgot. We want to thank our sponsors. Mark Mayfield, the Mark Mayfield play of the game from the Kansas City Chiefs game. I'm very upset that we blew through that, but there's been a lot to talk about. We've been off for a week, so I'm going to call it vacation brain, if you will. My Mark Mayfield play of the game was a Sam Shields interception. I mentioned to you before the game how the Packers have two interceptions on the season, and both of them are by linebackers. That was Clay Matthews and Jayrone Elliott. Jayrone Elliott, of course, had the interception of Russell Wilson. Clay Matthews had the big pick to seal the deal against the Bears. My play of the game is Sam Shields. He had an interception in Chiefs territory, deep in Chiefs territory. The Packers scored a touchdown. The game was never in doubt, in my opinion, from there. Jason, your Mayfield play of the game is what?
Man, I thought we were going to go in reverse order. I had, like, the perfect transition and setup for you. So I kind of debated between two plays, and I'll go with the one I didn't pick then, since you already went. So you did the Sam Shields pick. So it wasn't a big play, because at this point when this happened, the game was already kind of well in hand, and yeah, the Chiefs were kind of charging. But so Jeremy Maclin catches a crossing pass, and the Packers are in that soft underbelly, you know, prevent defense. So everybody's playing off, and there's this huge gaping hole in the middle of the defense. So Maclin kind of bobbles the ball for a second, reels it in, starts running for daylight. Micah Hyde is trailing on the play, and he is taking a very wide angle because he does not have a speed to catch up to Maclin. So his best hope is to maybe get there, take a swipe at the shoelaces, and hope that maybe he can trip him up. And I'm sitting on the Chiefs side of the field at about the 30-yard line, and I'm about halfway up the bowl, okay? And all of a sudden, I see just this, and my eyes were drawn to it immediately. I see this green and yellow blur running faster than I've ever seen a human being run in my whole entire life. Now, admittedly, I've not been to very many track and field meets before, so I'm sure that there's a lot of faster individuals out there, but Sam Shields runs Jeremy Maclin down and takes him down before he can get into the end zone. And Jeremy Maclin is not a slow human being. It was unbelievable watching Shields at that point in the game when he probably could have just laid up and said, you know, screw it, let him score, I don't care, we're going to win this game anyway. But he jumped in there, ran Maclin down, made the tackle, and that speed is real, folks. I mean, you know, Sam Shields gets beat sometimes, and every corner does, because, you know, the game of football is not just about sheer speed. Sometimes it's scheme, routes, help over the top, you know, you name it. Sam Shields almost was my Mayfield play of the game, because that was just incredible to watch, and it was a great hustle play by Shields and a great play that he made. But the one I'm going to award as my Mayfield play of the game was Aaron Rodgers in the end zone, escapes a potential sack safety, rolls out, and is able to complete a long pass for a first down, and that was a third down play. So, you know, you knew the Chiefs were going to be coming after him. I said to the guy who was sitting right next to me, I said, the Chiefs are coming on this. It's going to be jailbreak. They got to protect here and not have the same situation happen as did in Pittsburgh when Aaron Rodgers got absolutely blown up by James Harrison and Don Barclay was right there in the middle of the mix. So, Rodgers, again, we talked about his amazing level of play, and this was a perfect example of it. I mean, he just, you know, maybe in years past, and even in the Super Bowl year and 2 or 3 years ago when they were having a great year in 11, he might have gotten sacked. He might have kind of ducked in there, held onto the ball too long. But he's sensing when he needs to move around. I know that he's aware of who's protecting him. you know, Don Barclay being a prime example. And when he needs to kind of move around and get out of harm's way, this is just another element that he's added to his game that only makes him so much better. And when he's moving around, Aaron Rodgers is always looking downfield. His receivers are always trying to get open. And he's going to find somebody who's going to make a play, and he did in this case. Completed it for a long gain, and they got a first down, and then they continued to march on. So that was my Mayfield play of the game. It's just vintage Aaron Rodgers. It's one of those plays that we all have probably kind of come to expect from him, but that we'll look at and watch 10, 20 years from now and just sit there and say, wow, I forgot that he used to do that, because he does it all the time, and it's absolutely incredible.
Absolutely is, and I think, Jason, that alludes to a point we both made earlier. Mastery of the quarterback position, that's what that play points out to me. That's our Mark Mayfield plays of the game. We will do that every single week. I promise I will not forget when we discuss 49ers and Packers next week, which leads us to our predictions. We discussed the matchups. We've broken it down. Jason, we do this every week. 3-1 or 4-0? Me? I pegged it as a loss at the beginning of the season. I said that the Packers always have a game that kind of makes you scratch your head a little bit. I said that the Packers would lose this game in Santa Clara. I said they would win the second time around in Santa Clara for Super Bowl 50. However, I didn't expect the Packers' defense to be this good. I didn't expect the Packers' offense to be on a roll right out of training camp. I did expect them to be 3-0 at this point. I picked 3 wins to start the season. I also didn't expect the San Francisco 49ers to be this anemic as they've looked early in the season. I picked them to be one of the worst teams in football, but I expected that to be an implosion around the middle of the year, something where they lost like 7 straight games to close the season or something along those lines. The Packers are a better football team. We mentioned the Vegas odds, you know, 12.5-point favorites if you disregard home field advantage, giving the Niners 3 points, 9.5-point favorites if you just take the straight line. That's because they're a better football team. They're better on offense. They're better on defense. They're better on special teams. Realistically, I think the only way the Packers lose this game is if they find a way to beat themselves. They have the same issues. They're not mentally locked into the game, which Rodgers said they need to be. Mentally locked in, which is something he mentioned several times talking to the media this week. I think they will be mentally locked in. I think the Packers put up a bunch of points. I think the Niners get a couple garbage time points. And that makes the game look closer again than it really was. But I like the Packers 34-24 over the San Francisco 49ers, concluding the theme of exercising their demons from the first 4 games of the season. Jason, Green Bay or San Francisco?
Green Bay. And I finally remembered to pick a weird score, because we got to start seeing some like new weird scores on the regular, don't we, with all these 2-point conversions and these longer extra points. So I went 35-19 Packers. And, you know, the last score that San Francisco gets may end up coming later and make it, you know, somewhat closer than it looked. But I think the Packers are going to win this one, you know, fairly, I don't want to say easily, but, you know, I think emphatically would be a better term. I think they're going to come ready to play and continue to take care of their goals, which is, you know, exercise the demons, establish their presence, their dominance once again. And if they have to see any of these teams later in the season, which the San Francisco 49ers are not one team I'm expecting to see again, that those teams know that they're going to get a different Packers team than they've seen in the past, and they're going to have to be ready to play at the top of their game. And hopefully it's going to be a road game for those teams at Lambeau Field. So Packers win. You know, you mentioned, and we kind of glossed over it a little bit earlier because I know we've had a lot to talk about, but, you know, the wide receivers, Anquan Boldin, Torrey Smith. Smith's only 26 years old. He had a couple of good seasons in Baltimore, and he's still got that deep ball ability. So it's going to be interesting to see how big of a factor he's going to be. But without Vernon Davis, I'm just not sure that the Niners are going to get the production out of Smith that they would if we had to allocate more resources to what would be Davis in the middle of the field, where he's kind of gashed the Packers in the past. So I think Green Bay wins this one going away. They're 4-0 heading into the second quarter of the season. And it's a big win. It's going to be a big road win for the Pack, and I think I originally had this one pegged as a win, and I don't think it was ever in question. I think they finally get it done and get back on the good side of this rivalry.
It'll be nice to be back on that side of things, and I can also nearly guarantee, at least, that this will be the last time for quite some time that we reference the exorcism or anything that deals with exorcism
of any sort of demons. It'll be nice, hopefully with a 4-0 Packers record. Now, it is officially past midnight where I am at. Jason, that makes it 10 o'clock where you're at because you guys have that oddball time zone thing out west. But that means it's game day for two-thirds of the country. And since you guys are up so late with us listening, we have a bonus topic for you. Jason, we discussed it a little bit earlier. We both have the Packers winning this game. That would put them at 4-0. The bye week is 3 weeks. There's three games before the bye week. Today, next week against the Rams at home, and the following week against the San Diego Chargers at home. The question that comes with that is, what do you think the Packers' record is going into the bye week? Now, mine is 6-0. I expect the Packers to win Sunday. I said that already. And I said before the season started, I don't expect them to lose at home. I have no reason to believe after the two games I've seen at Lambeau Field that they are going to be conquered there anytime soon. They are dynamite on offense at home. They are dominant on defense at home. And their special teams have played very well there and really all around as well. The St. Louis Rams present some challenges. The defensive line, those defensive ends against David Bakhtiari and Chris Long will keep me up at night starting on Monday. I do know that. But realistically, the Rams just don't have a lot of firepower offensively. And if Rodgers is going to solve that defense at some point, and he's going to be able to figure out ways to put points on the board, I don't know if Nick Foles will be able to get up with him in a shootout. I don't expect the Packers to score 50 in that game, but I do expect them to win, and I'll talk about that more on next week's show as we preview Packers-Rams. The Chargers are a team that I can't quite figure out. You know, they dug a big hole against the Detroit Lions. They were able to come back and win. They've lost the last two games and really weren't all that competitive in either game. I don't see the San Diego Chargers coming into Lambeau Field and beating the Packers. I don't know if they would beat them in San Diego. I like Phillip Rivers a lot. I'm just not sure what he has in terms of weaponry, and I'm not sure if that defense is all that good either. And really, no defense has been up to the task to stop Aaron Rodgers at Lambeau Field. I don't expect that trend to stop anytime soon. I like the Packers to be 6-0. They will go into a bye week and then come back and play the Denver Broncos. Aaron Rodgers, barring health, Aaron Rodgers against Peyton Manning on Sunday Night Football. I've had that date circled on my calendar since the schedule came out. I cannot wait for it. Those two quarterbacks going up against each other. And we'll talk about that more as that time hits. But, Jason, any objections? 6-0, 5-2, 4-1, or 4-2, excuse me. Can't be 3-3 because you picked the Packers to win the Niners against each, unless you changed your mind.
No, I didn't. And if we're just kind of talking about the next couple games and when we think the Packers might run into a legitimate threat to their record, their perfect record, then I don't think it's going to be any of the home games. I mean, you got the Rams and the Chargers. They're both decent teams. I think the Rams, are, you know, their defensive front is very good, probably one of the best in football, now better than Seattle's. If you kind of look at how they've played so far, and Seattle's kind of not what they used to be. But Aaron Rodgers, against the Seahawks and against the Chiefs, both of whom have good pass rushes and good defensive fronts, showed, hey, they can game plan for this type of active front. They, you know, quick passes, quick decisions, you know, get a good matchup on the defense. And Aaron Rodgers is so accurate that even if he's throwing that, you know, classic slant that Brett Favre used to throw all the time, you know, he can get it done, and they can just dink and dunk down the field. And that keeps Aaron Rodgers on his feet, or at least from getting pummeled by the Rams defensive pass rush. And they'll find a way to win that game because it's at Lambeau Field. And you know, the Rams, I don't want to kind of generalize here because I haven't watched a lot of Rams football this season. They beat the Seahawks, but you get an indoor team, you get a turf team out in the elements, even though the weather's not bad in Green Bay yet. They're just a different team. And, yeah, Nick Foles is not, you know, he's not going to win a shootout against Aaron Rodgers, and this Packers defense is due for a big game. And I think they're going to probably have one against one of those two teams. So I don't think those two games are going to be any kind of threat. I think the first legitimate – we've talked about it. I think the first legitimate threat the Packers are going to face is probably going to be that game at Denver, and that's not till the beginning of November. So, you know, we've got a ways to go, and obviously the Packers could certainly get tripped up between now and then. Injuries always change everything, so we never know what that's going to look like. But I think that Denver game is probably going to be a, you know, there's a reason it's a Sunday night game. It's still Peyton Manning. He's still playing well. Denver hasn't lost yet. So you know, who knows if they're going to be two undefeated teams and it's going to kind of be the matchup everybody hopes it's going to be, Manning versus Rodgers, which we've only seen once before. Jacob, I don't mean to pour any salt in the wound there, but, you know, that is kind of my take, and you know, I'm sticking with it. I, you know, obviously when we made our preseason picks, that was before they started playing any games, and they've obviously shown us a lot over these first 3 weeks that have probably changed. I know they've changed my mind on a couple. I mean, I ended up picking the Packers against Seattle when I think I had them losing that game, so in the preseason. So that's my take. I think the Packers stay clean at least until that Denver game. But you know, right now, if they were playing that game, I would still take Green Bay. I think they'd still find a way to eke it out. And then from that point forward, then you're starting to get into 2011 territory where you kind of start wondering, can they pull it off? Because, you know, if they're going to win those big games on the road, who's going to beat them?
Absolutely agree. So for those of you keeping track, we both have the Packers winning on Sunday against San Francisco. Jason likes the Packers 35-19. I like them 34-24, and we both like them to be 6-0. Going into the bye week, which would be a huge boost, definitely the fast start that Mike McCarthy emphasized. A lot can change between now and then, relative health, things of that nature, so we do reserve the right to change our predictions. That's going to do it for today's show, though. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Mark Mayfield, Waukesha Sports. You guys are excellent. We appreciate all that you do for us here, Cheesehead TV, PackersTalk.com, all the affiliates around here. You can follow the show on Twitter. We are at Pulse of the Pack. You can follow me personally. I am at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason at Jason Perrone. Big game today, tomorrow, depending on where you're listening from, against the San Francisco 49ers. Let's finish off the exorcism of these demons from early in the season. Let's go beat the San Francisco 49ers. We will be talking to you live next week, discussing either the 4-0 or 3-1 Green Bay Packers. Thank you, as always, for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Packs Podcast.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.